as far as I can see beyond all things outside of me. So it is, so it shall be. I will believe the evergreen. All I see is blue and green, no thoughts behind or in front of me. No lines divide the sky and sea.
Hello, Indigenous Earthlings. Here we are again, seven revolutions later, balancing into yet another Express Yourself. I'm Luke Nestler. Well, that delicate dream pop rumination, suitable for a silent winter evening, comes from the deer, and the deer come to graze on the stage of Steve's Guitars tonight, bringing their self-described Southern Gothic style, kind of folky country with psychedelic indie rock dream pop stuff. Whew. To Carbondale, once again. Bonedale Ballet has a winter dance performance coming to their studio space at Bridges School next to the library tomorrow and Sunday, featuring ballet and tap pieces. And here to tell us about it are Natasha Simpson. Hi, Natasha.
Hi.
How are you?
Good.
Good. Ruby Marker is here, too. Hi, Ruby.
Hi.
And Keenan Bell is here, too. Welcome to, and Alexandra, how could I forget you?
Hi, Luke. Thanks. Hello, everybody out there in the community.
Another one coming down the pike.
Here we are, already.
I've forgotten how to pronounce it all. Les Sylphides.
Les Sylphides Variations and Ballet and Tap Repertoire. That's the title of our show this time around.
And I poked around a little bit online, and that's sort of Well, it has some history, that name and that title, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. I could just describe a little bit of it to you. The music is some of the most gorgeous classical music out there of Chopin. And so Les Sylphides is based on a short, plotless romantic ballet. Some would describe it as a ballet of mood, originally choreographed by Mikhail Fokine. I don't know if I pronounced that right. So although it is framed rather like a divertissement in the forest, is what they say, this takes place in act two of what's actually a full-length romantic ballet of La Sylphide. So there's a little play on words there.
So it's not a story. It's more of a mood piece.
Exactly. It's like how I see it as a celebration of the music, Chopin's music, which is... just, you know, I was reading a little bit about that and thought, oh, that's very much aligned with why I typically do choreograph. I hear a piece of music or something I've known for so long that I get so inspired. I just have to set some kind of ballet usually or tap piece to it. So
do you have an actual pianist playing along?
We don't, but we have some pretty amazing speakers. So nice. It sounds like it's live.
Nice. Something about Chopin. Tell me about Chopin, Ruby. I'm assuming that you're... dancing to Okay, Keenan. How about Keenan? And I don't mean that to be a hard question at all. Is it fun to dance to Chopin?
It is. It's very, how do you describe it? It's very upbeat and playful and happy music. So it's fun to dance to because it makes you happier. If you were having a bad day, if I'm having a bad day and I come into rehearsal, all I have to do is listen to music and I'm good to go.
Nice. So I imagine you could say the same about the audience that comes in to see it.
Hopefully.
Yeah. How about that? Natasha, you're part of the tap part of this concert, aren't you?
Yes.
So you're a tap dancer. Wow. Is that hard to do?
No.
No? Really? Do you have to practice a lot? Get up close to that mic, Natasha.
Yes.
You do? You have to practice a lot?
Yes.
Huh.
Yes, they do. They've been practicing. All the groups have been practicing once to twice a week since January. Actually, since December is really when I started to choreograph the majority of the work. So, it's something that we've been putting together for a few months now. And Anthony and I are very excited about this particular program. Bringing on more tap dance, and we also have a surprise dance at the very end. We won't announce what that is, but something a little out of the ordinary for us, so which is really great. And it's not ballet or tap.
I'm going to guess it's a flash mob.
How did you know?
Because I think I saw some announcements or I saw something that you were doing a flash mob workshop or something.
Yeah, we just started a new class Wednesday nights at 6 for teen and adults. So so here's the secret. We're going to be premiering our first new flash mob post thriller.
Oh, so I just spoiled it. I'm so sorry.
It's okay. It's great.
We won't
it's
go
exciting.
Any further. How about that? Wow. So are all of you girls part of the flash mob?
I don't think any of us are.
No. Oh, okay. Okay, well, we'll stop talking about the surprise. How about that? I'm really interested, Natasha, to know about tap dancing. Tell me a little about it. Do you actually put things on the bottom of your shoes?
So they come with metal taps on the bottom of our tap shoes. And it's really fun to do tap, and I don't know what to say.
They're on the ball of the foot and then the heel. And so we work a lot with the ball and the end of the heel, and even the side of the foot can make sounds too. So,
oh, interesting.
A lot of rhythm. And if they're not already rhythmical, these students are definitely developing that musicality. And it's so much fun.
Huh.
It's pure fun.
Are you dancing alone, Natasha, or with other people?
With other people.
How many?
Seven people.
You have seven people tap dancing at once? Wow, that's a lot of rhythm. I'll bet that sounds really great. Now, do you dance with music?
Yes.
Oh, what kind of music?
Well, we like to use a lot of swing music during class, but this particular piece of music for the kids' tap class is called Now I'm Following You by Madonna.
Oh, okay.
It's a really fun song.
Huh. I think she's done some tap dancing before.
I think so. And ballet and Pilates. She's done a whole lot
She's done a lot of
movement.
Different kinds. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So. Yeah.
Ruby, what's your part in all of this?
I'm actually a tap dancer too. So.
Oh, nice.
I'm in the adult tap class, and I'm also doing a tap solo in this particular show.
Oh, a solo. How long does a solo last?
My solo is about 2 minutes.
Uh-huh.
Which is kind of terrifying.
Which is probably, it'll be over like that, but it'll seem like an eternity.
Yeah.
See, that's the way it is in radio, too. It's the same kind of thing, you know? It's gone before you know it, and then while you're in it, it seems like it lasts forever. So you've been practicing a lot then,
Oh,
huh?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Could you do it in your sleep?
I would hope so.
Yeah, and Ruby is a senior this year, CRMS, so I wanted her to be able to highlight her talents as a senior solo. So,
wow.
It's exciting.
So have you been involved with Bonedell Ballet for a while and with coordination?
I think I started dancing there like 4 years. 4 years ago.
Huh.
Maybe with I started with tap, and then this year actually I teach my own class Monday
nights. Brand new class that yep. Ruby's teaching.
Wow.
Broadway repertoire, 6:15 to 7:15 Monday nights.
Please come. It's a lot of fun.
Super fun. And I also take the ballet class on Thursdays.
Broadway repertoire.
Yes.
Like, give me some examples.
Well, we have learned the opening number to A Chorus Line. Not Ooh. All of it, but it's a really iconic dance. Ooh. Pretty difficult, but really fun.
What makes it difficult?
A Chorus Line is such a dancey show that to like kind of throw a bunch of people into such like a fast-paced dance is pretty tricky. But I think we're picking up on it, and it's looking really good. We're also working on a Kinky Boots number,
Ooh.
Which is easier, but still really fun and sassy. And we're going to start a number from All Shook Up soon, too.
All Shook Up. Elvis Presley's All Shook Up.
Yep.
Oh, wow.
Fun. Awesome.
How about that? I could see tap dancing to All Shook Up. Yeah. Yeah. Do you ever like put taps on your hands and do handstands and stuff?
I've never thought of doing that.
No. I wonder if that would even be possible.
I think it would hurt.
I bet it would be.
Well, you should try it.
I'll give
if
that a try.
If anybody could do it, you can do it.
We'll see. But we are really excited for everybody to come and see our program just to encourage, you know, from we're going to have ages, you know, toddler all the way up to adults participate in this dance performance. So please come. And the way I describe the show is, you know, enjoying the rhythmic fun of tap, the classical beauty of ballet, and then in general, just the joyous expression behind dance is what we really are excited about sharing. Once again, it's our passion, and you'll see it in the dancers for sure. They're doing terrific. So,
Now, Keenan, are you one of the ballet?
I am. I am in the Les Sylphides piece.
And she is a soloist in it. She's our lead.
Oh, wow. How about that? So this is your star turn, so to speak.
I guess you could say that.
Well, I bet you've been practicing enough to where you're not nervous.
I guess you could say that too.
Yes.
Yeah, I've been practicing quite a bit. It's, you know, performing in front of a crowd of people that you don't know is always nerve-wracking,
sure.
No matter how practiced you are.
Sure.
So.
Sure, but you'll get over that pretty quickly, I'll bet.
Oh, yeah.
Now, do you practice at home too?
Not really. I can do like little things in place, but I prefer to dance at a studio as opposed to at home. If I'm at home, I'm not doing ballet. I'm goofing around dancing to whatever the heck I'm listening to. So,
have you ever tried African dance or any other kinds of dance?
When I was really little, I took some tap, but other than that, I think it's mostly just been ballet or whatever I feel like doing.
Mm-hmm. What is it about ballet that attracts you?
I don't know. It's probably the grace and beauty of it all and how it looks so simple, but in all reality, you're thinking of 200 things at the same time.
That is so true.
Huh. So,
like, what are you thinking of when you're thinking of 200 things? You mean all the movements that you have to make?
Yeah, which muscles to use, what you're supposed to be doing. You have to remember to point your toes. And it's just a lot to think about.
Huh. What's the hardest thing about it?
The hardest thing about it is probably remembering to have fun with it. Because it can get so technical that you forget to have fun.
Uh-huh. Wow, what a great answer. I'll bet that's true, though. I can see that for sure. So do you have strategies that you employ to remember to have fun?
Sometimes when I'm feel like I'm doing everything wrong, I just sit and I just listen to the music and just do whatever I want. One time I had a choreographer make me pick a song and perform my dance piece to a different song just to practice it to make sure I really knew the piece.
Huh.
And that was fun. And that's a good way to solidify what you're supposed to be doing in your brain.
Uh-huh.
And it helps you to really know your piece and your music. And it just helps a lot.
Huh. I don't suppose, Ruby, that it's probably not hard to have fun when you're tap dancing.
No, it's definitely not.
It's just part of the, that's the definition, isn't
yeah.
it? Huh?
Yeah. You got to remember to breathe, though. It can get pretty exhausting.
Really?
If you're going for too long. Yeah.
Huh.
But it's really fun.
Now, geez, does that, wow, I never really thought of that, but that must be really hard to breathe while you're, to think about breathing while you're dancing.
It definitely becomes something you become to just like you consciously think about it while you're dancing, and your choreography or your movements and your breath become one of the same after it. It could happen quickly for some dancers, but I know for myself, it took me a while to really find that coordination between the two. And it makes life so much easier when you can breathe. That's your break. That's your rest in between. Mm-hmm. Your transitions in your movements, and it really does carry you through your work, and it helps your muscles too, keep them supple versus tensing up and cramping, because you don't want to go through a Charlie horse while you're out on
Ooh.
Stage.
Oh, that
so
would be hard.
Breath keeps you going.
Yeah.
It's a great connection. So,
huh?
Yeah.
Wow, I never thought of having a Charlie horse on stage, but I can see where that would be
yeah.
really bad. Can you get Charlie horses while you're tapping? Ruby?
I've gotten cramps in my calves before.
Have you?
Doing like a toe stand or something like that.
Wow. How do you fix a cramp? You just massage it.
Breathe.
Really? It's all about breathing.
Well, you massage it too. And
uh-huh.
You try and just, yeah.
You do it yourself or you have somebody else?
Yeah, I massage my, yeah.
Uh-huh. Huh.
Become a good self masseuse as dancers, you know.
Uh-huh.
There isn't always a masseuse available. So like, okay, you know, got a cramp. You just find ways to work those muscles out and then you continue on.
Huh. How about that? So incorporating all these things, Alexandra, is that part of the curriculum for these dancers? Figuring out, teaching them how to breathe and teaching them how to deal with things that might happen on stage
yeah.
that you don't want.
Yes. And there's a lot that, you know, I think they, as students and developing dancers, learn on their own as well as they're going through the process. We don't necessarily literally say each and everything like, okay, this is going to happen next, but it's a process. And I think the more time you spend with your piece of choreography or whatever you're working on creating, it is just a process. And it's new and it's raw in the beginning, and then as you practice and grow into it, it becomes this like this new pattern in your body, and you learn to work with the breath and the coordination and musicality, and then it really becomes effortless, believe it or not. And that's what was it Keenan or Ruby saying that, Keenan, about ballet, how it looks so easy, and also like, you know, really hard technical tap piece. excuse me, when it's developed well enough, it really does have that ease and flow, and then the joy can really show up. So that's when the dancing gets really fun. It gets pretty addicting, I'd say, when you get to that point. Like, okay, I want to feel this again, and I want to be able to present this to audiences out there.
Now, did you choreograph the ballet or the tap or both, or did you?
I've choreographed mainly the ballet. Uh-huh. I choreographed also one tap piece that Natasha's in, the kids' tap, and mainly ballet. And then Anthony has choreographed a ballet for his 4 to 6 year olds, and they are birds. Their piece is called Fine Feathered Friends. Very adorable. And, and then Janine Stickle, former manager of the Carbondale Branch Library, she choreographed the adult tap piece. And I don't think I'm forgetting anything. Our surprise dance was choreographed by myself and then a little help from the certain flash mob. If you're there, you'll know which one. So, yeah, it's a lot of fun being creative and being able to share that with the community.
How many kids are on stage in this?
I'd say somewhere between 35-ish,
30-35. Wow.
And then with our adults going up into the 40s for students, so total. It's going to be a really nice show.
We can't talk about price, but we can talk about where people can get tickets and et cetera. So let's go
right.
there.
So, yes, you can get tickets at the door tomorrow, Saturday and Sunday shows at 2:00 at Coordination and Bonedale Ballet at the Bridges High School building, just next door to the Carbondale Branch Library. And they're welcome to come in as visitors can come in as early as 12:30 or 1. We'll be in there preparing. So,
how many people can fit in there to watch a performance?
You know, about 65, 70. Yeah.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. Nice and cozy. And
so you do two of these big shows a year, right? Pretty much?
Two. And then with our new flash mob tradition we have, that adds three. And then any additional performances, which can happen anytime, it could go up to four or so. So that's what we hope for. And we just hope for more. So having a great time performing and being able to work with our students. And then they can also start creating pieces of their own, too, which is great. So.
Nice. Well, tomorrow and Sunday, 2 o'clock, Bridges.
Yes, we will see you there. Have a wonderful time. And come see us after the show. Find us on stage.
Natasha, thanks for coming in and talking to us.
Thank you.
You're so welcome. I'm glad you did. Keenan Bell, thank you, too. No, is it Bell? Yes.
Yes.
Keenan Bell, thanks.
Yes, that's me. Thank you for having us.
And Ruby Marker is here, too. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, stay with me. There is more to come on Express Yourself. That's Electric Voodoo. Electric Voodoo with the warning. The deer have the buzz, but Electric Voodoo has the beat, don't they? Electric Voodoo comes to Steve's Guitars tomorrow night, and that might be a good opportunity to shake off your cabin fever. Redstone resident Sandy Kaplan has carved out a distinguished career in photography for several decades, from Hollywood portraits to Paris runways to wild horses on the high plains. She has trained herself to capture the fleeting moment with soul-deep intention. She recently spent time in British Columbia photographing spirit bears and lived to tell the tale. She will share stories about that experience at the Cora Logos Gallery in Basalt tomorrow morning at a coffee talk beginning at 10:30. I spoke with Sandy on Tuesday, and we started with how she approaches her art. Sandy Kaplan, welcome to Express Yourself.
Hey, Luke, how are you?
I'm well, thanks. How are you?
I am just great.
I'd like to talk about something that I found in your artist statement. I think it was on the Cora Logos website.
Yes.
You say that I don't think about what I'm doing. It's all second nature. It's happening between thoughts or in that space of no thought. When I let go, the photo is made. When I step back and get out of the way, the photo finds itself.
Good for you.
That's true.
That's a spiritual practice. That's
absolutely.
So, you know, it's interesting. I hear artists accomplish in their field many kinds, musicians, mm-hmm. novelists, painters, photographers. They don't all talk about that kind of thing, but many times they do. And I'm thinking that for them and for you, apparently, your art is your practice.
No question. No question. Last night, my husband and I got into a conversation about magical thinking. And I'm a magical thinker. I believe everything is possible. And if you just let it be and relax, one of the classes I teach now is called the Zen of Photography. And I teach the student to stop before they shoot. Sometimes you can't. Sometimes you have to just grab the frame. But to stop before you shoot, take a breath, be with that thing, whatever it is that you're shooting, and then get the photo. And you don't take the photo. You make the photo. Taking the photo is just taking a picture of whatever is there. When you make the photo, you really, I mean, I don't want to get too esoteric, but you really do become one with whatever it is you're photographing. Mm-hmm. And that makes the difference. My photos are not always in focus. They're not always technically perfect, but I get the soul of whatever it is I'm shooting.
One of the things that occurred to me when I read that was that you have to have a base of craft behind you to allow yourself to not think when you're pressing that shutter. Is that right?
Did you happen to watch the Olympics last night and the ice dancing?
No.
The ice dancing last night was amazing. I mean, there were all these people and they all deserved a gold medal. They've all worked since they were little tiny kids. They have all the technology, all the technique, all the learning, all the muscle memory. And then they get on the ice and they don't think. You watch the snowboarders, they put on music. They're not thinking about what they're doing. They're being with what they're doing. And that's how it works.
Mm-hmm. Because they've trained themselves
because they
to
trained.
Reach that
Absolutely,
point.
Yeah. Oh. So I started shooting in the 60s. Just let my age go. And I've worked hard to learn what I know already, and I don't know anything. There's so much to learn in this craft. But you do everything you need to do to learn what you need to learn, and then you take a picture.
You started in portraits, right?
Well, I started doing anything I get paid for. And so I was in Hollywood, and so I was working in the motion picture industry, photographing movie stars and that kind of thing. So they were portraits, they were headshots, and all kinds of things. And it's, again, Gordon and I were talking this morning, and I was saying how difficult it is for me specifically to get in a gallery that really understands me, because I don't want to be a photographer that shoots horses, or that shoots bears, or that shoots barns. I want to be a photographer that makes art. It doesn't matter what the subject matter is. Doesn't matter if it's Henry Fonda, or there goes my age again, or Justin Bieber, or a horse. It's all the same thing.
And so when you're making art, what is it that you're making? Are you evoking a feeling? Is that what you're doing when you're making?
I have no idea. I have no idea. That's where that comes in, where you just step away and let it happen.
You spent a long time in the fashion world.
I did.
And I read on your website that you photographed in Paris. Mm-hmm. It's a long way from Paris to an island in British Columbia photographing spirit beers.
Well, I lived in Redstone for 20 years. How's that?
Oh, okay. So that's what did it. It was Redstone.
Well, Redstone was after all of that.
Oh.
I was born in Chicago, raised in California, raised in Hollyweird, and loved it. I loved it. I wanted to be a fashion designer. And turns out I became a photographer who shot fashion. And I loved it, I think, more than any other shooting I've done. I don't know. I love it all. But maybe that's my favorite.
Huh.
It's when I was a little girl, I used to play with paper dolls. And I would dress them up. And then I had regular dolls. And I would make clothes and fix their hair. And that was the ultimate. Shooting fashion was the ultimate playing with dolls.
Interesting. You know, I've never gotten fashion, but you're talking to a guy that wears sweatpants, and that's basically it. I have a dress tie-dye. Let's put it that way. But I get that. I don't know. Explain fashion to me.
Fantasy.
Fantasy.
Fantasy. That's all it is. It's fantasy. Think about it. You look at those photographs. I'm diametrically opposed, I will say this right now, I'm diametrically opposed to what the fashion industry has done to women and to models. I hate it.
Objectified them?
Objectified them, but I was at a horse shoot a long time ago, 4 years ago or so, and this woman came up to me. And she was quite attractive, normal-looking woman, but attractive. And she just tore me apart. And she said, "You don't remember me, do you?" And I went, no. And she said, "Well, I was one of your models back in Hollywood. And I used to have to sit in the corner and eat a chocolate bar, eat a piece of a chocolate bar, because I hadn't eaten in 4 days so I could fit into your darn clothes." She really let me have it. And there are girls dying all over the world right now trying to fit in to the fashion world. That's the part of it I really, really hate. Mm. The creative part, the wonderful part, the things that people do with a piece of fabric, the feeling it evokes, is wonderful.
Is that what eventually drove you to landscape and wildlife photography?
No, my life has taken so many turns. It's taken so many turns. I was in Paris for 5 years and starved and loved it. It was difficult and it was fun and I really, really enjoyed it. But it was time to leave. I went back to the States and opened my studio in Los Angeles and was there for 8 years and did very well, loved it, shot a lot of different things, a lot of advertising, things like that, a lot of fashion. And then dropped out of life for several years and put down my camera for 25 years.
You did?
Yes. Yes. I put down my camera for 25 years. I went to massage school. I became a healer. And I did that for a very, very long time. In between, I lived in communes and wore beads and robes and danced around and found myself. And then one day in Redstone, a girlfriend of mine, a very dear friend, said, "You've got to get back to shooting." And she bought me my first little Sony point-and-shoot. And it was my first digital camera. Oh, boy, was I scared. And after about 3 months of playing with that, I called Nikon, and I bought my first Nikon. And it sat on my dining room table for 3 months before I had the courage to open the box. And then I started learning how to use a digital camera.
All in good time, I guess.
All in good time.
A time to every purpose kind
right.
of thing. Huh. So, and that was 20 years ago?
That was maybe 10 years ago.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Huh. Yeah. We're talking, Sandy, because you're giving an artist talk tomorrow at the Cora Logos. Featuring spirit bears.
My spirit bears.
Tell me about spirit bears. Wow. What are they?
Wow. A spirit bear is the actual name for it is a Kermode Bear, K-E-R-M-O-D-E, Kermode Bear. And they're a very rare bear. It's a subspecies of a black bear, but it is not a black bear. It is not an albino. It has pigmentation. It has incredible brown eyes. When they give birth, they give birth to both black bears and white bears. You never know when a sow is going to give birth, what she's going to have. There are only between 200 and 400 of them left in the world now. They're not on the endangered species list, which is something I don't understand, because they are. And they're extraordinary. And to be with them is absolutely magical.
Why? How?
They have a personality I've never witnessed before. I've seen bears here. I don't know if you remember, but up in Redstone, we had Tripod. Tripod was a little cub that had broken his leg. And I was there, actually, the moment he broke his leg. Mm-hmm. And I ran and called the Forest Service, and the Forest Service said, don't do anything. He'll either make it or he won't. And he did end up making it, and he became kind of the bear of Redstone. And he would hobble around on three legs. And he was sweet, and he had a darling personality. He used to come and sit in my yard all the time. The spirit bears, they're called spirit bears for a reason. They go back thousands of years. And when you talk to the Indians, the First Nation people up in British Columbia, the First Nation people are the caretakers of the bears. And their stories go back, way back, generations and generations back, to where they first found them. So they've always been the keepers of the bears. And they're very spiritual to their beliefs. When you go in the longhouses and the lodges and you see the paintings on the walls, you'll see turtles and dolphins and whales and birds, and there'll always be a spirit bear there. And the spirit bear is the only white object in the paintings. They're just extraordinary. They're so special. When you see them, you know. Now, when I went, I was really privileged to be with an amazing woman. Her name is Jody, and Jody Willard is an extraordinary photographer. And she had two other women with her, so there were just the four women. We, of course, had guides. You can't go into the Great Bear Forest without guides, and the guides are the First Nation people. And there were some other people on the river, and other people were not getting the bears. And every morning we would go there, and we would take some sage, and we would rub the sage in our hands, and we would hold hands, and we would thank Mother Nature for letting us be there, and we would thank the bears for allowing us to be there. And usually within 2 or 3 minutes, we had white bears all over the place. Hmm. And the other people up and down the river never had the bears.
Hmm. So they didn't have the spirit.
They didn't have the spirit. You have to have the spirit to have the spirit bears. We had bears literally. There was one point at which I was sitting on a ledge with my legs dangling in the river. And the black bear came across the river and started sniffing at my foot. And the guide came over to me and very quietly said, don't move. And I said, I'm not moving, but I think I just peed my pants. It was amazing. There was one day when one of the white spirit bears came across the river and got as close as I am to you, at which time the guide came in between us and just looked at this bear and said, good bear, nice bear, go away, bear. And the bear just looked at her and turned around and walked away. Now, you can't do this except in September. September is where the bears are feeding in order to hibernate. If you go in there when they have cubs, you can't do that kind of stuff. You can't do that kind of stuff any other time. And I certainly couldn't have done it by myself. These guides have been raised with the bears. Our guide was just incredible. Jolene was an amazing woman. And Jolene Robertson. And she's Wow. And she's been going into the Great Bear Forest since she was 5 years old. So these people are raised with these bears. I don't even know what to say. The hardest thing for me was not to scream with joy when I saw them, because your whole body just starts to shake. You get so excited.
How about that?
I love my work.
You must.
I do.
What do you love about it? Why do you love it?
Everything. Everything about it. I can't even tell you. I'm married now. I've only been married for 4 years. And when I wasn't married, when I was single, I would work all night long. I would work days at a stretch. I wouldn't get out of my pajamas for a week just working. I love every part of it. The part I don't like very much is getting on the planes and having to go where I need to go. That's kind of the drag. But once I'm there and once I'm actually shooting, wow.
Well, tomorrow morning at Cora Logos Gallery, Coffee
Everybody
Talk.
Come. Everybody come.
And as you can tell, dear listeners, she's a talker. You must be full of stories.
I am.
I bet.
Full of other stuff, too.
I don't believe it for a second. Thank you, Sandy.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
That's Sandy Kaplan, photographer. Sandy will share her stories in downtown Basalt tomorrow morning at Cora Logos Gallery, beginning at 10:30. Stay with me. We have Feeding Giants up next. They are an acoustic duo from Newcastle. This multi-genre husband and wife band has a busy weekend with a gig tonight at Marble Distilling. And tomorrow night, they play the Hoot at the Ute, benefiting the Rifle Animal Shelter. And here with us now, live in the studio, are Andrea Ware. Welcome, Andrea.
Hello.
And Kevin Ware on the guitar. Hi, Kevin.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm well.
Welcome to Katie and Kay, both of you.
Thanks.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
So you're based in Newcastle, and I hear that you're starting to reach out. You're playing Palisade and Eagle and Rifle and now Carbondale.
Yeah. Yeah, we're trying to branch out our wings.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Trying to get up into Basalt. What about Aspen? Are you trying for Aspen,
we'd
too?
We'd love to get into Aspen, yeah. Basalt. Anywhere that they'll let us play. We love to play.
So do you have like a house gig down in Newcastle?
Yeah, we play at the Black Dog Saloon on Main Street.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's a great place to play.
What makes that a great place?
Probably the community, the owners, Susan and... Roger are amazing people. They have live music every Friday, and it's just a great place to go and listen to music and amazing food, good drinks. It's awesome.
Now, you guys are doing a lot of original music, aren't you?
Much as we can get away with, yes.
Get away with?
Yeah. Well, all of them are good, so you just have to keep trying.
Well, you know, that's the key, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Keep trying. Well, I visited your website, wearefeedinggiants.com, and I think you have 3 or 4 songs up there on the website.
I believe we have, 4 on the website.
And those are all originals?
3 of them are originals.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Just a couple of them sounded really good.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah, we had those recorded at Cool Brick Studios right here in Carbondale.
Is that right?
Yeah, with David.
Dave Taylor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Great guy.
Yeah.
I have an opportunity to see his studio. It's amazing. It's very comfortable.
So the CD is a couple, 3, 4 years old?
Yeah. We started out with a demo just so we have something to send potential venues. We are looking to re-record those songs, and then we've had some more songs we've written since then. So we're working towards making a new album, I guess.
Huh. How about that? Well, how does the writing process work for you guys? Do you work together? Do you both write lyrics? Do you both write the music? How does that work, Kevin?
Most of the time, not well. Because when you have two individuals with two individual ideas who would both like to express those ideas, sometimes it doesn't work well. But sometimes it works very nicely.
Uh-huh.
It just comes out and everything's happy and magic.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, it just depends.
Well, in listening to the music, I'm hearing a little bit of southern rock. I'm hearing a little bit of blues, a little bit of Appalachian acoustic music in there. Is that what turns your crank, that kind of thing?
They call it classic country now, but it's just the good stuff is what I call it. So, you know, your Willie Nelsons, your Kris Kristofferson's, your Hank Jr.'s, guys like that. But really, if it's good music, I enjoy it. If it's music that I don't enjoy, then I just ignore it. But, I think anything you listen to is going to influence you in one way, shape, or form. Uh-huh. It's just going to happen naturally.
Yeah. What are you listening to these days? I heard you like Bollywood.
I'm a big fan of Bollywood adventure movies, not romantic comedies.
Okay.
But they have to be the timepiece adventure movies.
So that means you're going to start playing the sitar and the tablas?
I get my hand on one, I'd try it. Yeah,
you'd be willing to try anything.
Sure.
We have plenty of instruments. I don't think we need to add any more.
Everybody needs a sitar.
Well, you have a guitar, and it's right there in your hands. I'd love to hear a tune or two from you.
Okay.
We have Feeding Giants live here in the studio at KD&K, playing tonight over at Marble Distilling.
What do I gotta do did you do? Hey, yeah, did you know? Whoa, 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 whoa.
That's Feeding Giants, Andrea and Kevin Ware here live in the studio, playing tonight over at Marvel Distilling and tomorrow night at the Ute. Can you play another tune for us?
Yeah, absolutely. We'll play one that I wrote. This one's called Damn This Traffic.
Looking for an exit sign, hoping then I'll be just fine. Really need to get away. Maybe then I'll be okay. Looking for a U-turn, wanna go back and change directions, feeling kinda lost with all these tempting intersections. Don't want this road, you can only go one way, everybody's moving, but it always stays the same. Green, yellow, red, yeah. Stop ahead. Green, yellow, red, yeah. Stay right. Up ahead, working out the details, and we'll tell you when it is. Forced to make a detour, I don't know where this road goes. Looking for the next sign, but we're moving really slow. Stop it. hoping then I'll be all right. Really need to get away. Maybe I should stop and pray.
You nailed that one. Good job.
Thank you.
Yeah. Lots of good metaphors in traffic, aren't there?
Yeah. Great metaphors in traffic.
Yeah. Well, that's Feeding Giants playing live here and playing tonight over at Marble Distilling. And that brings to the end another Express Yourself Today. Thanks for coming in, you guys.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah. Come on back again. Maybe when you get that new CD recorded.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
All right. All right. Stay tuned for the news. Pulse of the Planet coming right up on KDNK.
We're listening to slowed down recordings of bat echolocation.